emergency power activate.
What up, what up, what up? We're back to The Call. My name's Austin Brandt. I'm going to be your host today. I'm sitting down with two guests once again joining me here. Tim Williamson to my right and Dr. G. Dr. G's back. Welcome back, G.
Hey, good to be back.
What's going on, guys? I'm glad to be back in the studio here. We got things up and rolling. Man, the program's hitting. Things are firing. We're firing all cylinders here at Gateway. And the first thing I want to talk off and get right into is we have this new awesome program that some of our students have been pulled into from Gateway. Tim, you want to mention something about that?
Yeah, it's we partnered with the Medical School of Wisconsin and some other schools, Columbia, right, Doc?
Yeah, School Columbia of Nursing. College of Nursing and the Milwaukee School of Engineering.
Yes, and they kind of are headlining this program where they invited us as a paramedic student. And I'll have Doc kind of talk about it a little bit more. Where they, bring all these professions together, paramedicine, nursing, medical students, and just talk about how to communicate and teamwork. And we just had our first session, last week?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a program to focus on interprofessional education with the idea that healthcare is a team sport.
Yeah.
So they're bringing together, in our cohort, there are nursing students, medical students, and paramedic students. That participate, and they meet twice a year. It's a two-year-long program, and the idea is that you meet with the same group each time you you get together, and you kind of solve problems as you would in your various kind of healthcare professional positions, and work together to either take care of patients or this theme from this past meeting was on communication.
Yeah. Awesome.
They talked about some communication tools, challenges with communication, and I know you guys, probably agree that communication is by far the most challenging, aspect.
No. I thought you were going to say there's no problem
best,
with
yeah,
it.
The best thing that we do.
Yeah.
We talk a lot if it's effective.
We talk a lot, but we don't really talk about anything at the same time.
No, that's awesome. And actually, I had one of the students come into class, and he was saying that there was recommendations, and the nursing and medical students and paramedicine students were talking about like a good handoff report or like an expectation of something like that. Man, I can't, it's hard to tell a paramedic student, like, close your eyes, I'm going to tell you the dispatch instructions, and then you have to rely on that, right? And usually it's like, oh, yeah, dispatch instructions. But as a receiving attending in the hospital here, like, how important is that getting a good handoff report? Like, hey, this is what's coming to you. Because to us, it's like, well, come on, we're in this pre-hospital setting. It's uncontrolled. Just deal with it. We're going to drop you something off.
Yeah, I think there are, I think handoffs occur all the time in medicine, all over the place, and their importance cannot be understated. There's some research that talks about how many patient safety events happen when that occur between handoffs.
Right.
When somebody knows a patient really well and they hand it off to somebody else who doesn't know them that well, and that person is supposed to kind of pick up where that initial original provider left off. So I think a good handoff is extremely important, from EMS into the field, coming into the ER. I had one case when I was a medical student in particular where this person came in. I was rotating at this hospital in the emergency department that's kind of like a sepsis factory. They're just kind of surrounded by a lot of nursing homes, and they just get constant, sick people that come in with urinary tract infections and pneumonia, sepsis all day. And this lady came in that looked septic. She was febrile, hypotensive, confused, just like all the other patients at this emergency department sees. And it really was the EMS handoff, truly, that kind of clued in that the patient hadn't been taking her steroids that she's on after having her adrenal glands taken out. And if it wasn't for that piece of information that they had, that we had truly no way of getting rapidly, we wouldn't have figured out her diagnosis, of an adrenal crisis, because that can look like sepsis. And she... it would have been hours until we figured it out if we would have ever found it.
So you're saying it was almost like an iceberg situation, right? Like you were presented with this. This is what we see. Obviously to us, this is the symptoms that we're, presenting by that patient. But underneath the water there could be so much more, and without a good handoff report. So you're saying like a lot of communication hopefully gets increased. What else are we getting out of this? I see and hear a lot. It's like almost like a Dr. Oz situation, right? Like peering behind the curtain, especially for pre-hospital. We have this, like, this is the way we do it on our side. But once we get to the hospital, we kind of clap our hands and be like, here you go. But how can we integrate it a little bit better other than communication in that care treatment plan?
Oh, you mean in the sense of like a handoff? Or?
Yeah, like how are we getting better at that, right? Like, because we can talk about, you know, I expect you to say this in your report. Mm-hmm. But generally, what can I do better, you know, other than, you know, having face-to-face with other individuals in these, you know, care settings?
And I'll just, you know, so typically when, you know, they're probably most paramedics hand off to nurses, right? And then you get the report from to ER nurses, right? So it's almost like a
two-tiered system.
I would say one of the issues with handoffs is that the emphasis has been on giving the report and not as much on receiving the report.
Sure.
And truthfully, I think that a good system is set up where the person who's giving the handoff has a set template that they follow, and the person that's receiving that handoff also has that same template in front of them. So they're ready to receive the information in the same order that it's coming in.
Yeah,
you know?
So you know what you're looking for.
Yeah,
right?
And there are a lot of these templates that exist that you can use, you know, and I think finding one that highlights the high yield things that makes a difference, you know, that make a difference in patient care that need to be given during a handoff is important. And using that, you know, like I said, on both sides. So, you know, one thing that we've done is we've kind of standardized this in the hospital from handoffs going from us in the emergency department to patients getting admitted to the floor. And the idea is that we have a set handoff template that we complete, you know, for every patient so that when they, you know, get taken over by the inpatient team, even though we give them a verbal handoff, they have a written template that's filled out to the T with the exact information that's, you know, that's important.
So you're making sure you don't miss the information that's necessary in that patient care.
Yeah.
And pre-hospital handoff, or I guess, excuse me, reporting before that handoff, is there anything specific that you're looking for as far as like, you know, because it can vary from, you know, provider to provider, even more so organization to organization. One thing I've always tried to tell my students is, you know, we're looking for resources, right? Like, what would tell me I need to spin up a chopper or get more additional resources, boxes or whatever, like number of patients or possible presenting pathology. So something for you guys that you obviously want to get your resources, cath lab spun up, you know, stroke team, whatever. What I like to say is three simple things. This is what we had. This is what we did. This is how they are. Anything to add, or what would you suggest?
Yeah, I think that's really to the T. You know, I think when you look at handoffs that are done really well by really experienced providers, that's really it. They kind of realize what's important. And I think you're right that initial kind of radio report, really what's important is getting the resources together, you know. So I need to know if it's a trauma patient, how sick they are, to know what I need to be set up. You know, if it's a STEMI patient, you're right, do I need to activate the cath lab? You know, what can I do if it's a cardiac arrest patient? You know, I got to make sure I have enough people that are there ready to receive that so we can continue CPR and, you know, or the other big thing would be like airway management. You know, if somebody's going to have a difficult airway,
right.
I got to make sure I want to be ready, so, you know, because they're just like there's lag time when, you know, EMS doesn't get the, you know, the most accurate dispatch information. Mm-hmm. You're going into a house with, you know, with not much equipment, and then you get in there and find out they're in cardiac arrest, and now somebody's got to go get their airway bag.
What's your stair time? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. How fast can you fly down those stairs?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's the same idea on the, you know, on the other side.
You know, in the same token, we want to keep it short, concise, and improving that is making sure you have the right information. I guess what's the downfall of that is, you know, being too long. Like, you have a good provider, and it's almost a negative on the end of them as a provider. Like, hey, I gathered all this information. I did such a great job building a rapport and investigating these things from this patient. Now I'm going to tell you, you know, my patient is a doctor of this, is a Sagittarius, likes long walks on the beach, you know, and you have a 40-minute radio transport to you over the radio there. How do I make sure that I keep that concise? Like, well, how do I look at my piece of paperwork, right, and say, this is vital, this is vital, this is vital, let's get that to Dr. Growy?
Yeah, I think that goes back to the handoff process that you're using and make sure that you have a standardized tool. And like I said, there are a lot out there that you can use, but I think that helps delineate, you know, what's important. You know, I think the downside of not being able to write and truly working and getting experience helps
experience.
You learn.
Oh, yeah.
It's important.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
for sure.
That's such a huge part of it. But I think the downside of having a report that's long-winded, you know, giving horoscope signs
right,
and stuff like that is,
patient ate four
you know,
cookies.
People get you know, especially a really sick patient, you know, people get excited. They want to get in there and start caring for this patient.
Sure.
And one of the things I think we do a good job of where I work is for trauma patients in particular, we don't let them come onto the hospital bed until the report is done.
Ooh, that's good.
And
good.
The idea is that that puts that emphasis on that EMS report, you know, and it prevents people from you know, kind of being distracted from looking at the patient when they should be listening to the report.
Absolutely.
You know,
no,
but people get impatient if it takes 5 minutes,
right,
you know,
sure,
when
absolutely
somebody is
right,
really
especially
sick,
that handoff,
yeah,
report.
So,
especially,
yeah,
handoff. And I like that because it does make sure that the report's being given. Now, let me ask you this then. Let's, you know, put the spotlight on Austin. So when you were in your paramedic program, are you seeing these students? What is the number one communication thing we teach these students, or what is probably the biggest deficit? So for me, when I was a student, a paramedic student, even my first couple of years as a paramedic, radio reports. Just not the ones you call into a doctor and call on level ones. It was the simple one you just talked about because for some reason I just scared the ever-living you-know-what out of me.
Yep.
But why? You know, you're only talking to somebody else. So, and I can guarantee, and I know that, you know, that's a normal reaction for students.
Sure.
So, you know, one, what is your, you know, opinion about that? What did you struggle with in your communication when you were an intern? And then two, what can we do better to teach our, you know, paramedics?
Sure. I'll come from two and address one. Two, what can we do better? And I think that's what I was hinting at with you, Dr. Growy, is, you know, I think the length of your radio report should match the acuity or sickness of your patient. And sure, obviously that's varying or whatever, but like if I have, you know, a code in the back of my ambulance and I have me and Tim and my driver up front, I need to be doing things, right? So I might just be like, Dr. Growy, got a, you know, very sick, critically ill, critical red patient, you know, two-year-old coming to your facility, working a code. We're about 5 minutes out, running ACLS. And again, we'll see you in about five. But, you know, I got enough information as I can. You can't withhold from your patient care. So me personally, I see that, and that's that apprehension. I feel that, right? I feel that, like, if I get into the ER, I did everything I needed to perfectly for this patient. And then Dr. Grau is like, and also, what's the blood sugar on that headache? You're like, it's the one thing I missed, right? I dotted all my T's and crossed my I's, right? Yep, you know what I'm talking about. The backwards necessity of checking everything off. And I think we feel that pre-hospitally, right? Like, have I done everything? Have I, you know, made sure that every single thing's checked off? And I think we relay that. Like, hey, Dr. Growley, believe me through this report. Like, listen to all the questions I've asked. Listen to the depth that I've went to build a rapport with this patient. And it's not that they don't believe you, right? Because they've got, you know, 67 other patients that they're trying to juggle. So it's finding that balance, honestly. And I think the deficit, you know, question number one here, what do we do or what do we not do as good as we should in EMS? And I think it's that. Like, hey, if you've assessed everything, this is what I had, right? We showed up, patient had shortness of breath. This is what I did. At X, Y, and Z hours, we instituted a dual NEB and put them on high flow O2, and this is how they are now, right? Expecting this is, you know, the path that we went through. And you can display that if your patient's not getting better at all, right? That's not like a thing that where you always have to have a patient getting better. You've tried an intervention. You know you're doing the intervention the correct way, right? Mm-hmm. While we're monitoring our patient's response to treatment and we're out to the hospital, that's how we, you know, kind of dictate that care plan. Plus, then we're able to, like, call. Me, I always tell my students, you should always have a plan or an idea, right? A plan of attack if you're calling for medical control. But if you're at that point where, like, hey, I've done all these things, you can literally have that built up in your head, then this is what I did or this is what we're going to do. Help me out. I'm kind of up that creek, you know?
Right. And then just thinking long term. So we always teach, you know, what hospital can meet this patient's – well, what is the patient's need? Which hospital can match these needs? And, you know, let them know earlier, right? Because if Dr. G needs to – activate the trauma team, how often the time limit does it take on average?
Yeah, it depends.
You know, it depends where they are.
Right?
Depends on where they're at, what time
you know,
it
could be a few minutes. You know, but to your point about kind of making sure what you need and the ask, I like how you brought that up, kind of the ask of what you want from the person you're calling. You know, whenever I do any kind of handoff, one of the things I'm kind of a stickler about that I learned that I like is that first sentence should be the presentation of what you have or what you're asking. So, I've got a guy that I'm bringing in with a STEMI, and then I'm going to go into this.
Yep.
'Cause that frames the listener's mind for what they want to listen to, you know.
Right.
If you tell me that I've got somebody that has is having a STEMI, I'm thinking about, what interventions did they do? What's his history?
Sure.
Really, what's the EKG showing?
Right.
You know, if you tell me it's somebody that's having a COPD exacerbation on BiPAP, you know, that kind of paints a different picture that helps frame the rest of of the information that you're going to give.
Sure.
And the other thing is, if you lead with that question that you want up front, sometimes they might know that answer right away and don't need you to give the whole report. Or if you happen to be saying, oh, you know, I'm taking this patient, you know, if I say, oh, I'm coming in with a patient who's having a STEMI, and they, and maybe you just are kind of having a brain fart because it's 3 a.m. and you're going to the non-STEMI hospital, they might be like, well, hold on a second.
Hey-o. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's okay too.
Yeah. And trust me, call soon, right? Because they will say, they'll cut your radio report off right now. Back, and you just go back where you came from. Not come in.
And that's, you know, and that's okay. You know, that's okay if that happens. But that's what I think is kind of the advantage of kind of leading up with that ask, or, you know, or leading up with, you know, kind of what you have, or, you know, hey, doc, I'm calling you. I got a question about a medication for seizures. This is what I have. You know, this
the
is
intention,
what I've done.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what? Where do you think?
Because it also helps you got, you know, it kind of, if you come in on that radio and say, hey, Dr. G, question mark, tell me what to do. You know, both of you are kind of at odds then, because you're like, well, I have no idea what you're being presented with, and I'm relying on the, you know, the report that I'm getting. So giving you that idea of like, I don't know, question mark, this area where I'm headed, you know. And that brings me to my next thing, you know, spooky, scary, right?
Spooky.
And yeah, that's right, spooky for me. And I was thinking, like Dr. G, I think.
Let's just get our, hold on.
Right,
hold on,
I think, pretty amazing provider, right? But let's be honest, sometimes it's coming up towards October, you know.
Yeah.
And we get that, you know, Halloween feeling. When was the last time a patient, not physically, but like some presentation or what tends to scare you? Like, is there something?
Oh,
that
I know
just
where
makes
you're
you,
going with this.
Yeah,
it's
makes
good.
You, makes
it's
you,
good. He's going
okay.
somewhere.
Makes
with
you
this.
Shivvy shivvy, right? Is there anything that makes you just shiver in your boots?
I would say sick kids. Really little kids. Sick asthma patients. Mm. Those are the really big ones that make me, and then obviously like really difficult airways.
Yep.
Like swollen airways, you know, those are the things that keep me up at night.
That's
I'll
absolutely
say.
True.
Yeah,
I think that, because I was talking with my paramedic class last week, and they're like, man, what's one thing to make you start shivering in your boots, right? It's going to tighten up that sphincter and make your insides rattle around. And honestly, I think all of these that start coming up are, for me, are airway, right?
Yeah.
And reason being, and this is my justification for that answer, is like, it's the unknown. You know, it can be so stable for so long, but then it absolutely cannot be stable so quickly. And it's figuring that out and seeing so many patients where, hey, we got an hour, and 3 minutes later, you know, they're unresponsive or lost their airway. One of the things, and my friend just brought this up to me last week, this call that I ran on, and I want to get your take on something like this and management for this specific situation. So airway management, right? I had this individual pre-hospital get called out for a sore throat. It's an alpha level response or our lower level response. In fact, we didn't even go lights and sirens, right? And we end up rolling in there, and one of the family members comes running out, and she's running out, and she's got this super panicked look on her face, and she's got blood all over her hands.
Oh, wow.
So already you're like, well, it's about to get interesting, right? Yeah. And as I walk in the front door, I have an individual. Have we ever seen, you know, Alien versus Predator, that movie, before?
I know. I've seen each one of them individually.
Or the better
graduated
version, just Predator, right? Just Predator with Arnold, come on.
What is that like? Well, of course.
I mean, obviously Predator, right?
You have Jesse the Body Ventura,
I got some homework tonight.
Yeah, okay. All right. Hold up. That's what we're going at.
See, guys, I guess, you know, being a doctor, you don't have all this time to watch movies.
True, true. We'll make you a list. We got you.
We got homework.
But in Predator, right? When he tries to give you a little kiss with his face, it opens on up, and you see like, and his, you know, his face flexes four different ways. That's exactly what my patient looks like. I walk in the front door and I see this, like,
you
know, 16 to 19 year old.
I was thinking something else.
Yeah, 16 to 19 year old guy, and he's got this arm, like literally the length of my arm, dangling out of his mouth, a clot. So what's the two things that give me the heebie-jeebies, and like, especially this time, like, make Austin super frightened? Bad, nasty clots, right?
Really?
Like, you get a big, bloody nose, and a super massive clot starts dangling out of there. Mm. For some reason, my legs just start clattering together, and my knees are getting a little weak. And then, obviously, we all know this about Austin Trakes. But those two things, I always get the heebie-jeebies of managing, right? Like a bad blood clot or even just an airway problem. So for this situation, right, was he managed all the way to the hospital? Honestly, I sat there and crossed my fingers. I put a nasal cannula in his mouth, or in his nose, excuse me.
Was he bleeding out of his mouth?
He had a
Is it
like a Dean's ice cream container? Half of it was full of blood, and it was just pouring down. It was a he had a tonsil surgery, and he coughed.
Okay,
and it
I was about to say, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, there we go. I should have asked.
Like, where is
it
coming from?
Like, which year's this?
Well, that's the worst part about the GI stuff. Yeah. Is,
right.
You know,
well,
we'll say bad hemoptysis, coughing up blood, is also. Ooh. Also scary.
Oh, man.
Yeah, just bleeds.
Yeah, you just don't know. It's like, and for me, it was he was so pale, cool, clammy, diaphoretic.
Oh,
and at the time, I was an IV tech or advanced EMT. And we called a paramedic unit in. But, you know, like, brainstorm-wise, right, something like this, like, other than, and I've thought about this long and hard, so I want to pick your brain. Other than, you know, he goes unresponsive, try to pass a tube. You know, like, what do we think? What would you do, you know, in that situation, given that backseat quarterback time?
Truly, I would go to the hospital.
Yeah, let's go to the hospital,
All right, we're going.
So I guess you made the right
person
call there.
Sitting up and protecting their airway,
right.
You know, as best they can.
Oh, absolutely,
you know?
Yeah, sniffing position.
I mean,
forward.
Sir, if they go unresponsive, then you're in there, and then you got a, you know, a good suction catheter on the back of that, and you're trying to hopefully get enough juice so you can get a tube down. You know, there's some, you know, there are other things in the emergency department. Some people are talking about kind of numbing the back of the throat up and putting some TXA on a piece of gauze and kind of applying pressure.
We've been talking about
back.
That a lot lately, just TXA in general.
Yeah, so that, you know, that TXA has kind of been thought. Really, I mean, if you got to intubate him, you got to intubate him. Hopefully you don't. But then it's also kind of calling the surgeon to come in and take them to the operating room, you know, to get in there. Otherwise, anything else that we're going to do is just kind of temporizing, you know, temporizing measures and try to stop the bleeding with
so
some direct pressure
no,
and kind of hope for the best.
Tourniquet I could put on
tourniquet. No.
Oh, yeah. From the paramedic point of view, it's pretty much kind of roughly the same. I mean, obviously with the
airway
management, number one, and then what's their vitals, you know.
Yeah, no
they,
one move, everybody hold, you know, your lucky charms in
blood
the same
pressure
moment.
And
heart rate.
So what gives you the heebie-jeebies,
what scares
Tim?
Everything. No, you know, I don't know. I would have to agree that I've had some bad, sick kids in my experience. You know, if we're being grossed out, we talked a little bit about it, just old urine just seems to make me want to vomit. But that's a lot of people, I think. No, I don't know. Nothing off the top of my head. Spooky basements in houses you've never been to. You know, you've been in houses. Yep. You've been in houses where it's like it looks really nice on the outside, and you walk in like, oh, what is going
really
on?
Really nice. Yeah,
I'm gonna get stabbed.
We have a good Halloween episode.
Yeah,
oh,
we do.
My.
Yeah, we need some sound of Troy.
There's
we need some
none.
Sound effects.
Yeah, there's none. Like you asked me, Austin, what's your recent scary movie you watched? I'll tell you, Winnie the Pooh, and that's about it. Like nothing else outside of that.
Yeah,
why?
Yeah.
Because I have a really good imagination. So as I'm trying to talk to Grandma Smith in this spooky basement, the only thing I'm thinking about is Paranormal Activity behind.
Yeah.
And like drop
make sure
drop
PD's
this
on scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Where there's just nothing but cat litter boxes, but no cats. You know,
like wait a second,
what's happening here?
Hang on, and you hear
that up.
Like, oh, that's just Snuffies.
You know what?
Like,
let's just get you out of this house. Let's get you out of here real quick. Lock the doors behind you when you're as soon as you put them in.
Yeah, or it's those patients. You know, I had a my paramedic instructor when I was going through school. He said he responded to an obvious death, right? And so he responds on location for like this 90-year-old grandma. And he walks in, and he's going to run a 12-lead, or 3-lead, excuse me. And I can't even imagine. Like, I try to, again, I have a really good active imagination. So this would literally make me mess myself, right? Like, this individual walks up, and she's laying supine. He starts, places two of the stickers on her torso, turns around to grab the other sticker, right? As he looks back, she's sitting up and says hello.
No,
yeah, right?
You're just lying.
I swear to you, she wasn't deceased at all, right? She was just very sick and looked like she was, right? And then PD didn't like.
Because,
some situation like that, because we all have had.
So what are we going to teach? What's the learning thing from that for our students?
That's palpate a pulse.
Yeah,
pulse, check responsiveness. Right?
Oh,
you know, if I cast anybody
gosh.
Off that they're dead just based upon looks, like half the days I walk in, right? You know, lower caffeine. You're like, well, he's dead again. You know, look at him.
Man, that, yeah, we could talk about that. All
so
kinds
is there
of stuff.
Anything else, Dr. G, you see coming forward towards the fall here? Like, obviously, we have furnaces kicking on, right?
Yeah.
So we see a lot of, you know, those CO calls, and we tend to get a little complacent with that as far as fire and EMS, right? Like, oh, we have another fire alarm or another carbon monoxide alarm. Like, oh, I'll just go down there with the detector, and boom, we're in trouble. Do you see any of these in, like, the fall and winter setting? You know, like, obviously, cough, cough, seal bark, that's starting to come around with those little kiddos. Anything else, you know, on the that's starting to pop up around here?
I think it's, you know, mostly that kind of stuff that you guys all, you know, have talked about, and, you know, obviously kind of getting ready for the winter and taking care of those hypothermic, you know, those hypothermic patients is always something to, you know, be ready for, because somebody, you know, who's truly, really hypothermic, even in our climate, is pretty, you know, pretty rare. You don't, I mean, you'll get some people that are, you know, that are obviously outside and cold, but to have somebody who's, like, frozen, you know, near frozen, sick, it doesn't really happen too often, and it's certainly not a skill you're even really thinking about in July, so
and
it's a good thing to kind of brush off.
Yeah, that's unique to Wisconsin, too, isn't it? With, you know, we have all of our bodies of water are cold bodies of water, right? So, like, no matter what time of the year you have any sort of near drowning in Wisconsin, it's always going to be a cold water drawing, right? Because, like, I think the number, don't quote me on this one, but I think it's, like, 69 or 70 degrees for that, you know, variance, and we just don't have that here. And we see a lot in the patient population, you know, as far as, like, access to health care. Isn't that who usually starts being affected by these cold weather spells?
Yeah, sure. Like, you know, people that aren't – I mean, and the same can go for the heat, you know. But you probably see more people that come in the winter because they don't have somewhere warm to go than, you know, usually the people that come in the summer.
The homeless patient population.
You know, it's because it's really stormy out or they have some kind of heat-related illness, you know, that brings them in. Yeah, and they can, you know, they can, and they're the people that are going to come in with, you know, with frostbite and trench foot and other things like that are all, you know, those environmental emergencies.
Protect, protect for us, right?
Yeah.
Not too much treatment-wise, you know, recognition and, you know, just protect those affected extremities. Awesome. Is there anything else that you kind of wanted to throw in as far as, you know, things that are utilized by our communication interprofessional organization that we have going on here? Communications in being one that we're addressing. Is there anything else that you see on the horizon as far as, like, newer concepts or just involvement from everybody else?
Yeah, no, I think the only thing I would say from my experience is I feel like when I would, you know, go to class and, hey, oh, here's another lecture on, like, communication or handoffs, I'd be like, all right, I'm gonna play.
They communicate to you by closing their eyes and putting their head to you.
But I think I've, you know, the more you kind of been doing this, and you guys can probably relate, the more healthier respect that you develop for the importance of, you know, of communication.
Absolutely.
And just so many patient safety events ultimately are truly just due to poor communication.
Yeah, totally. I think that was well said, because that's one problem I think everywhere just seems to teach until you get the experience, until you start to appreciate that, you know. We talk about all the time, but until you start really getting into it, start you interacting with other professions or coworkers, you don't really respect it, at least in my opinion.
And I think you're only as good, you know, I definitely emphasize this in class, you're only as good as what you allow in your presence, right? So institute good communication. And if you're present for poor communication, like you keep saying, it's for patient care, right? You know, these mistakes and things, these shortcomings are, we're not doing this for ourselves, right? We're instituting care. And if we want to have the patient's best intent behind that, well, then that's what effective communication leads us to, right? We always want to provide the best level of care.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on again today,
yeah,
Dr. G.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. And we'll definitely have you on. It's an open seat. Anytime you
want
to come on in, Dr. G.
Back.
Right on. I want to thank WGTD here again and Gateway for putting on another wonderful podcast here. Look for us on all of your local available podcast app on the Apple as well as Google Play. Anything to add here, Tim?
Yes. You know, be sure to check us out in for next episode. We have Amanda Bates from WMSA is going to come talk about some stuff. Doc, if you're available, get all your WMSA questions.
Hot off
the
press.
Be sure to
get trained up. Get ready to go.
That's right. We're always training.
Conference.
Train every day. and then email us if you have any suggestions or comments at emspodcast@gtc.edu.
Yeah, and I would say besides WMSA, I know she's doing a lot with kind of opioids in Wisconsin.
Oh, that's right.
That would
be
probably another good topic for you guys. For
we just covered that in depth
she'd be
in our class. Oddly enough, we just discussed that in our class. And what was it yesterday? New York Times just released an article. Pure Pharma, or was it Purdue Pharma? Excuse me, Purdue Pharma is now filing bankruptcy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, hey, a great topic to talk about. Well, thank you again, guys.
Yep,
I appreciate it. And look forward to doing better as we continue forward answering the call.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea. Jack's Cafe has a new menu for fall, filled with all the flavors of the season, including a hearty sausage, egg, and cheese breakfast sandwich or warmed farro bowl for lunch. Now open at 8 a.m., 2401 60th Street, Kenosha.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jeff Rasmussen, a retired Racine Unified teacher and administrator who currently serves as president of the Racine Area Retired Educators Association, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership,